Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and the FBI. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my fellow gangsters on the run. John Maltz is here. Hi, John.
My goggles are filled with tears.
I hear you. I hear you, man. I've been there. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
John's tears make me scream out core competency.
That was definitely the other one. That was very clearly.
I hear that is your safe word. We are here to discuss two recent episodes of superhero TV. First up, I think we're going to do... I've forgotten what order we did stuff in last week.
Like, we do Legends, and then we do
Legends.
Come on, Matt, get with the show.
Yeah. I know. I gotta get more professional. We're gonna start with the most recent episode of Legends of Tomorrow, Season 7, Episode 2, The Need for Speed. And then we'll follow that up a little bit later with a recap of the latest episode of Stargirl. But Guy English is our designated Legends of Tomorrow correspondent. Guy, are you there? You're on site there?
Yeah, I'm coming in over the transom.
You should do it all in an old time, like, you know, one of these days. Legends of Tomorrow.
I would love to be able to affect that voice. That would be super handy at times. Anyway, so the Legends of Tomorrow. We start with the car broken down, and the radio lets us know that they're still on the run. Nate feels like he's murdered Hoover, who was supposed to be on a train that afternoon. The plan is that Nate is going to go fill in for Hoover, thereby saving history. And they manage to play it like Hoover has captured Sarah and Ava. We get a little history lesson about how much of a dick Hoover is and how he helped carve racism into the U.S. justice system. I really did like that they spent some time beating him up.
Mm-hmm. Like, sure.
Yeah, it was good. Like, it felt like a... the more you know, kind of. Like, it was an aside, right. Very special episode moment. Right. Like, you should know about this guy. Anyway, Ava and Sarah honeymoon in John's house, the magical alternative reality house. But Zarya is having a real emotional breakdown, and she's basically turning into Bayrod. On the train, it turns out there's a plan afoot to kidnap Hoover, so they try to solve that crime. Meanwhile, Astra is feeling bad because she couldn't bring the Wave Rider back, but got Gideon instead. Nate is still moping around feeling bad because he killed Hoover. And he wants to make sure that they've got the right suspect because they nabbed, a Russian guy, right? Igor.
Yep.
Which, again, that whole Igor plot goes into just how insane all of the Red Scare kind of stuff is. Was and is-ish. Just, who cares? Whatever. I'm not going to get into that. Nate... in the visage of Hoover, interrogates the only suspect, this guy Igor, only to discover that he's been railroaded by his own man.
Very good. Yeah, putting the points on the board for you, Guy.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Oof, 1 point. Zarya and Astra managed to come up with a bunch of villains who they think are trying to kill them, trying to figure out why everything's been going so wrong. Wait, it's not Zarya and Astra, it's Zarya and Ava. The train gets railroaded, and they end up at the end of the line, surrounded by Capone's men. But the gang manages to get out of the situation by giving them a bunch of bottles of booze, which are somehow magically being created in John's fridge. Quite handy.
Yeah.
But then Hoover shows up alive somehow and shoots all the bad guys. Sarah manages to take him out with a bottle to the head, only to reveal that Hoover is a robot. Who then self-destructs. I really expected Hoover to be, not Ra's al Ghul, the other guy, the Legends guy. The timeless caveman from season one.
Vandal Savage?
Thank you. Yeah. Well, because I think he throws a knife at somebody at some point. I thought he was going to be Vandal Savage with a mask on, just as a weird, like, well, because that guy went through history being weird.
Well, so
yeah, being well, well yeah,
can, well, you, I mean, that's pretty close to the end, but
yeah,
we can talk about the bottles.
Yes, we should talk about the bottles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, meanwhile, Gideon seems confused. I've basically skipped this whole subplot. Gideon seems confused, but gives Spooner and Astra the data on the first time travel experiment, and then says the legends are in danger, and she learns to talk. And that's basically it. Like, I skipped a, you know,
the miracle of holding hands.
I want the subplot
because whatever.
Well, pick that up for one second, because there's one thing to just sort of, you know, cover that before we move on to the bigger stuff. I thought it was interesting because it suggests that Spooner's power of like understanding aliens last season was not just about understanding aliens, but about having some, you know, telepathic or other powers that, you know, her mother alludes to her being able to communicate non-verbally, which I thought was like, all right, good. She, you know, she still got her some sort of superpower to keep her on board there. Because they kind of joke about like what use are they in terms of, you know, the being helpful to the crew.
Yeah, I thought that subplot was the weakest of the three, frankly. I just didn't,
but
I didn't
completely
buy it that Astra was feeling useless. I mean, she's got freaking magical powers. She screwed up one spell. Come on. But and Spooner seems so confident that I don't think she'd be like that. But, you know, I mean, it wasn't like I'm willing to accept it. I just think it sort of went on a little long. It was sort of silly rather than providing a lot of.
Yeah,
like, it
not
seemed
silly
like it
in
was filling
way.
Time for the episode.
Yeah.
And at least it got someplace, but it was my least favorite of the three.
Okay,
I agree. Anyway, what else happens? So yeah, talk about the bottles.
Yeah, so something going on there, right? She's having some sort of an epiphany, and the fact that she the hit the robot in the head with the robot bottle seemed like it might be important.
I couldn't tell if that was just straight up comedy or
like they're going to, like, was that just a joke or is that going to come up next episode? Like, I mean, are they going to cycle through all the bottles? Cause I think that could be really fun.
Or are the bad guys just robots? Like overall?
Yeah, well, that's possible.
So there was a mystery about one of the bottles. Cause all of the bottles have the names of bad guys on them. And one of them is like, could this be it? Could it really be that we're getting chased by, and then it cuts, and somebody says Sarah as she's coming down the stairs?
I assumed that was the robot
the
bottle
robot one.
Yeah, but I mean, I could be wrong, but that was my guess.
Yeah,
yeah, it
but,
could be.
But they're like, they're shocked. They're like, no, it couldn't be.
Right.
What are they, and then what are the odds? So like, it gets confused. Like, I can't tell if that bottle is a joke. Like, I don't think it came up when they were just doing the random rundown of all of the possible enemies. Like, if they'd said robot and it wasn't the one that they were holding, that would have made me understand that this is the robot thing was a joke rather than whatever they were trying to do.
Well, so. They also hung a lantern on what I thought was the most likely explanation, which is at one point, one of the people they, or one of the you know, things they put in the pile of possibilities is ourselves.
Yeah.
And I, like, which I assumed was what it was going to turn out to be. Like, it was them from a different timeline on the Wave Rider.
Yes.
But perhaps that was so either that was a foreshadowing or that was literally just to, like, you know, mention it and discard it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, what's that bit? I kind of lost track of this where I think Astra's like, well, if I had a time travel machine, I'd just go back to immediately right before I created it if it went wrong.
I think she says she implies that essentially, like, they're sitting around waiting for the legends to show up. But if they had a time machine, they would have already come back, right? Like, is sort of the point. Right. Like, they wouldn't be sitting around waiting because they would just take the time machine back to right when they left. So by default, that means that something didn't go right.
Right. They must take action in order to. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They have to get involved because otherwise it's not.
Yeah.
And they imply at the end that it's because the time travel experiment hasn't happened yet. But then Gideon has that whole thing about, like, you got to get there in time or they'll all die for some reason that we don't know.
That makes sense. I thought, like, momentarily that it was, like, their Wave Rider going back in time to blow up the Wave Rider was them attempting to go back in time to stop their own downfall kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If you have a time machine, why don't you go back and stop right before you...
It's possible they have to go back in time in order to initiate this whole sequence of events. Right, they have to go back in time and blow up the Wave Rider in order for this to happen because there's something that needs to happen.
Right, exactly. Right.
Yeah,
but
but somebody's sending these Hoover robots, right? Like, somebody sent that. That's clearly an attempt.
Yeah, I guess
the time
Gary,
stream.
Yeah, somehow. I guess Gary, the one that Gary ate, is also a robot.
No, they said he was real.
Okay,
they specifically said
he
was
did
real.
Bleed, right? Yeah.
Yes.
And he also bled. Yeah.
Yes.
That's right.
Also, the robot very clearly very Terminator inspired. Time traveling robots. I wondered if that was kind of the thing they were joking about. It couldn't be time traveling robots because that's Terminator. But I don't know. I didn't bother stopping and checking all the bottles that you could see. I noticed like they talk about a few of them, and then some of the rest of them are labeled with like I know Rip Hunter's name shows up on one of them.
Yep, I saw that.
I don't remember who else appears in there, but there are a lot. I do have to give major props to this episode to Tala Ash, who does an amazing job again.
Yes. I think that's probably my favorite plot in this one, because she does such a great job and it's so kind of wacky and but also seems like it has a very important plot point.
So her like spinning out is great, and then her interactions with Ava are really, really good. There were several lines that were very funny. I thought the one I laughed out loud the loudest at was when they go upstairs and they're like, hesitate a little bit before you come in, and she goes, "Gross, moms."
Yes. I had to back up to make sure that's what she said, and I thought it was.
I had the captions on for it because I thought that was. It's like there's several things to unpack in that sentence, and all of them amused me.
It comes fairly quickly after her saying that core competencies is her safe word.
Yes,
she puts the handcuffs on her.
So I really enjoyed that subplot. There's actually fairly little Sarah in that subplot, which is interesting. Like. It's mainly just Ava, like, continually coming and checking on her. And for a second, I was wondering, like, oh, I wonder why. And now looking at the production schedule, I think it's because Katie Lotz directed next week's episode. So I'm guessing and that's the one with, like, all the guest stars in it. So I imagine lots of, like, things to juggle, which might explain.
It was next week, the crossover one?
Next week is the one, is just the flashback episode.
It's episode
100. Right. Because there's so many people, I know all the like previous people are in it.
Well, and so that's why the bottles seem like maybe they will come back.
Possibly. So, yeah, that's why I half expected Vandal Savage to be the bad guy. Also, or the robot. Also, the bottle that they were confused about, I thought, because it said Sarah, my conspiracy corner theory. It is.
First time this season.
John? Yeah, first time in a while.
Yeah, we got
a
crack that sucker.
We did all of What If without doing any conspiracy corners about it.
Wow.
Here's my conspiracy. So I think that the bottle that they skip and they mention Sarah, I think that maybe that bottle is the original Sarah coming back to get revenge on the clone Sarah that is with Ava right now.
Wow. Okay.
I'm glad you whispered so that nobody could hear.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to do an ASMR conspiracy corner thing. Yeah. But yeah, I think, I don't know. I thought that could be cute, fun. It feels very legendy, right? Somehow Sarah survives and like now she's got to come kill this clone of her. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I don't know. There's a lot. We don't really know. We don't really know what's going on yet this season, which I think is kind of fun, too. Like, it's kind of fun to sort of piece it together as they're piecing it together. And as we mentioned last week, I think the conceit of them being stuck in the 20s is kind of entertaining as well. They have to get on a train and they have to avoid people in the little tiny train. I enjoyed the scene.
It's hard to get on that train too because it's alternatively really tiny and really huge. It is a TARDIS of a train.
Funny, like sent you both an image because like seeing it go down the tracks, the perspective makes it seem like for sure it's a tiny train, which I thought was really weird. Like they couldn't find a stock footage and they have a train and yet they can't. Like I didn't understand.
Trains are hard, John.
I don't know.
Okay,
I guess so. I guess it's more expensive than I think to have a train go down. You know, like have a steam train go down the tracks.
That must have been stuck. But anyway, whatever. It was wacky. The indoor, like the honeymoon suite, was insane.
Yeah.
Like it was way too wide. I mean, whatever.
Right.
Not that matters. But then I think, Dan, you pointed out the engine in the shot that John's talking about is different from the engine that, like, when they actually stop the train.
I think that was John, too. John is very on train watch this week.
Yeah.
train spotting all over the place.
John's a very train spotting kind of guy. Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, I actually met him in a bathroom, and just his face was like halfway down the toilet. Yeah. Saved him from drowning, and that's our origin story.
That's a good one. That's good. I did enjoy the scene where Nate has to solve the crime of the missing purse, and it, yes, of course, turns out to be a dog. That was pretty solid. And like you said, the back and forth with like going over Hoover and essentially like Nate trying to decide like how much do I have to play up, you know, Hoover being Hoover in order to preserve the timeline,
right,
versus feeling like he was morally reprehensible and I don't want any part of that.
Yeah.
And having Gary and Bayrod be kind of the angels on his shoulder, despite, yeah, being continually profiled by basically everybody.
Yeah, I like that a lot because, you know, Hoover's sort of an American hero, like, or he has been at least, and that's inappropriate now. So I like at least that they're, well, it was whatever, now, then. I like that they're revisiting history and not just glossing over some awful stuff that one specific dude did. So yeah, I appreciated that because they don't need to do that. It's a goofy, silly show, but they, you, right, know, they, yeah, took the time to actually do it. So I thought that was,
yeah,
you know, nice and thoughtful. And,
mm-hmm, and I liked Nate's solution to the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yelling certain parts and then whispering others.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I really liked that. That was clever. It worked really well. I also liked, yeah, Igor, who was, yes, like, no, I'm not going to hurt you, but you really screwed up my family. Like, I liked all of it.
Yeah. I enjoyed the montage scene where they question everybody about J. Edgar Hoover and all the people who are rich in first class, love him, and all the other people are like, my personal favorite being the first guy where he's like, have you heard anybody talking about socialism? And the guy's like, well, that depends. If you're talking about making a living wage, a lot of us are talking about it. That was good. Bayrod at the beginning having like marveling about the internal combustion engine and the perfection of design, I thought was also kind of great. And they're like, this is what you're like when you're sober. in general, I mean, it's a fun little episode. I think there's not, it's not a most super momentous one. Like, we're still sort of getting started, but I enjoy the conceit of where we are and where we're going.
Do you mean we're just getting up to steam?
I don't want to derail us, but I mean, that's...
Wow, yeah. Oh. Just railway jokes. That's all they got. Mm-hmm. Man. We sure know how to conduct ourselves on this app.
I'm going to put the brakes on that right now. So,
yeah, this is awful.
You guys are really engineering these.
I'm going to have to kick you in the caboose.
Right now, I do not choose you.
God. All right, ticket for that one. So I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Okay.
Should we want
to let's do a ritual.
Okay, we'll do a ritual. Do a ritual. John?
It's a biff, yeah. I liked it. I didn't, I thought the Astra and Spooner subplot was a little weak. Just seemed to sort of be padding things out a little bit too much. But overall, I think it was a fun episode and, you know, hit some good points and, you know, about Hoover in particular. And... you know, it slowly evolved a little bit of a mystery about what's going on. So,
yeah. Guy?
Sort of like a weaker riff, I guess. Pretty good. I didn't get into it, but I didn't particularly like Nate's initial feeling bad about having killed Hoover. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And he's all worried about the time stream and how he's a nobody. I'm like, I don't get...
Some of the characters. See, that, I guess that is that some of the character stuff didn't seem quite.
I will disagree about that. I actually kind of like that they played up like his whole thing was being a historian. Like that's his whole origin, and I kind of liked the fact that he, you know, that we got back to that and him pointing out like this was I spent all my time like studying history and I know it was kind of in self defense, but he feels bad about it because he's like screwed up history, and I can understand that character feeling that way. And I like that, again, as with Legends in general, they resolve that by the end of the episode, right? Like he's like, you know, it's true. I made a mistake and this happened and you know what? I forgive myself and I'm moving on.
It annoyed me until we started getting into the Hoover stuff and that kind of thing. And then the resolution at the end. Okay. I kind of get that. But just
I didn't think they needed to make as big a deal out of it, I guess.
Yeah, I was like,
I think it was fine, but I think he seemed too...
He's beating himself up too much, yes. Which, you know, and he's usually...
He's a guy who turns into steel. He should be able to defend himself against a bullet.
Also a historian.
Yeah.
A historian who turns
was trying to shoot him in the head, which was...
Fair.
That's not cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people make irrational decisions and have irrational reactions to things that you know, he was absolutely acting in self-defense. I don't think anybody else on the show thinks that he should feel guilty about it, right? Which I think is the indication. But I can understand why he might not shock it off so quickly.
I don't know why you're being such a Nate apologist, but it's rubbing me the wrong way.
Because I like him.
Yeah, anyway, medium, like, you know, lower end kind of thing. It was fun. I liked it.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like what John said, I like the Hoover stuff, and I like the fun mystery stuff. And again, 1920, so I like the way they're all dressed. They look great.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a biff. I mean, I enjoyed the conceit of it. I enjoyed a lot of the humor elements and the stuff they dove into with Hoover, making it more complex. All the stuff we talked about. I agree that the Astra, Spooner, Gideon plot was the weakest of the three, although... The thing where she kept carving faces out of the apples was weird. I assume that was trying to indicate essentially these are the legends. Crew. They will die if they go do the time travel thing. But I like Amy Pemberton, and I'm glad that we get to see more of her as Gideon this year.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying kind of where that's going. And again, they're not. I feel like a lot of the things that I found like. Maybe frustrating are things that get resolved by the end of the episode,
right?
Like her not being able to talk, where it's like, all right, let's not do four episodes of her not being able to talk. No, exactly. We got over that. Yeah. We're done.
Right.
But like, yeah, we gave three scenes to that. Fine, perfect. Move on. And I love all the stuff with Zari. Again, she's been one of my MVPs on this show for a long time, just because I think her ability to switch between those characters is so impressive. And this week to get another side of, you know, our current incarnation of Zari, I think was just utterly delightful. So I enjoy that character and all the lengths that she has gone to you know, bring more depth to that character. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I feel like I'm thinking back over like all the characters, like it feels less like the characters who haven't had a chance to play multiple incarnations of their character are like fewer and farther between now.
Oh yeah.
Like at least almost everybody's gotten a chance at one time or another to play like a different version of their character or somebody else on this show. And I think that's what makes it fun. So it's a bit for me. I'm enjoying this season so far, and I guess we'll see how it keeps going from here. Mm-hmm. Next week's episode, I will not read the title because it's difficult. This is the one that's like wavewriter_error_100 Gideon not found, etc., which is, I believe, so this is the 100th episode of Legends of Tomorrow. It is the one where some of the previous cast will return, and I believe it's a sort of a Gideon centric episode. So
cool.
Guess we'll see how that goes. Looking forward to it. All right, let's move on to Stargirl Summer School, Chapter 11, the anti-penultimate episode of the season.
You and your $10 words, man.
I charge for those.
This is a dime store podcast, and you're dropping $10 words all over the place.
You can take the podcaster out of the writer, but you can't take the writer out of the podcaster. Third to last.
Got it. Thank you. Now
you're
I understand.
Welcome. This episode is mainly bookended. So we start with Pat returning from last week with Jenny and the staff. He's, I think, clearly already communicated to Barb that something terrible happened to Courtney, because there's no words exchanged. They just kind of sob and have a sad moment. Courtney wakes up in black and white land in Blue Valley, but an eerie Blue Valley. She wanders around town, kind of trying to figure out what's going on, and stumbles into the diner where she runs into the wizard and Joey Zarek, who died last season. And there's sort of a rehash of the time she met Joey in the previous season. And then she is guilted by this Joey into like lying to him about whether or not his magic trick worked. At school, where she stumbles in, she runs across the principal and Isaac, and then is attacked by Cindy, who cuts her and realizes when she bleeds that she is not an illusion, but is actually here. The Dragon King shows up looking for Cindy, and they escape through a locker, and we are basically get the briefing. This is the Shadowlands, as we expected. It's sort of like a purgatory where you're made to relive the things that you feel guilty about. Cindy has been spending all her time killing her father and Courtney, basically over and over again. Courtney stumbles into a memory/illusion of Barb going to work on Christmas, and like she's the babysitter, and Barbara basically blames Courtney for, like, you know, not getting to fulfill her dreams or something. But Cindy plucks her out and, you know, explains that this, you know, you got to find sort of the darkness in everyone here. Cindy is also, she claims she's not afraid of her dad, but there's also like her mother who she seems to have some issues with, and she's sort of dragged away.
Court encounter.
Yes, yes, we get there later in the court encounters Dr. Midnight, who's still alive in the Shadowlands, and is told that the goggles will show what's actually there, and when she dons them, it basically shows like all the sort of wispy clouds that we've seen him in elsewhere in the season. Dr. Midnight says he's been talking to Beth and that the Shade can bring them back and that Jenny can find him using the ring. So back in the real world, they use the Shade's business card, which creates a glowing map. In an odd moment, which I think will probably come up again, the Shade appears to be in multiple places on the map.
That's true. Yeah.
And they go to find him eventually in the movie theater, where he is sitting watching the picture of Dorian Gray, appropriately enough, and healing in the dark.
Yeah, it's perfect.
He's surprised to hear that Dr. Midnight is still alive, and they basically, you know, start trying to get him to open a passage to the Shadowlands. They find like, yeah, sort of the movie screen turns into like a doorway, and they can see Courtney and talk to her, but she's got to go have save Cindy. Instead, she finds Yolanda and Bruce, who sort of torments her for like basically screwing up everybody's lives. Meanwhile, Cindy is experimented upon by her father and sees her mother again, and basically we come to understand that she killed her mother possibly by accident, or so she claims. We also see Rick in jail, and Bruce asks about the locket around Courtney's neck and about her father and how she feels about her father. Courtney eventually breaks free, finds Cindy, and sort of takes them all, and they push through back to the real world, at which point the Shade, who has been sort of using all his energy to keep the portal open, apparently dies and turns back into a shadow. And we're left with Cindy looking around and saying, "So, who wants to kill Eclipso?"
I do.
Yeah. Who doesn't want to kill Eclipso? That's the better question here. I'm glad that they rescued Dr. Midnight. I thought that was great.
That's the answer. Yeah, me too. I'm glad. It was nice to see him fully colored, I guess.
I don't know.
He looked cool when he came out, like his suits.
Yeah.
Like they do.
Yeah, right.
It's like a little retro. We've seen Beth's version of the suit, and they're similar, but his is much, I think, more, again, kind of like 50s-ish, right? Like,
right.
Yeah.
Which I enjoy, the different sort of take
on it. Yeah, it's got more like a biker leather jacket sort of vibe to it, or like a pilot jacket sort of vibe. Yeah. It's cool. I like it. I did not like the black and white effect. It was like just, I don't know, it didn't bug me, but it was just, I guess it did bug me, but it was very flat. It was so obviously just shot and then just like with a janky ass like black and white transfer. Like it didn't look cool. It just looked, I don't know, like they'd done like the real basic swap. I don't know. It didn't. The Shadowlands didn't feel weird enough to me, I suppose. It just felt like sort of a reasonably cheap effect to run. But I don't know.
None of it bothered me, but yeah, I was watching it on the iPad, so I don't know, maybe that had something to do with it.
Yeah. I think I would have liked to see in the darks, like the blacks blacker, like a more, like a film noir feel, rather than just shot it and then just turned it gray.
Fair.
But that's a huge production deal, so it's not like I blame them, it's just I felt like it was a bit of a missed opportunity.
I thought I think looking back over a lot of the season, they should give an Emmy and also possibly keep an eye on the kid who plays Bruce, Because he's really good at being creepy.
Yeah, he's really good.
He is, yeah.
And, yeah, that kid kind of freaks me out, man.
I didn't quite get the purpose of their interaction, though. I mean, it seemed like the kind of thing where, like, if he feed, like, he's obviously trying to get her, he's goading her, he's trying to get her to admit that. And she does admit it, and then she gets away. Like, she walks away from him, basically.
But he doesn't, I think the thing is,
he doesn't get more powerful particularly, or anything. Seemingly.
That we can tell. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just didn't quite understand what the.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
outcome of that was supposed to be other than her admitting
that she has.
She does hate him because he's, you know, he's eminently hateable.
I thought that part of it might have to do with Cindy telling her earlier, like, you know, the reason that she was so frustrated with her is because she's so good, right?
Yeah,
and it was her coming to terms with the fact that she does have like a little, like, you know, like we all do, like she has a little bit of darkness inside of her.
Yeah.
And that gave her a chance to sort of.
Right. That was a point that was made earlier. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I kind of, that was fine.
It was fine. I'm not like super complaining about it or anything. I'm not sure where that was, what the point of that scene was supposed to be exactly.
I kind of don't mind not understanding Eclipso's motivations. Like, I don't think it's a character where you're meant to be sort of understanding or feeling empathy, really. I think it's just more like a force
of
evil.
No, I don't think, I don't think he's got, like, he's got a sob backstory. he's just evil.
He was never allowed to play reindeer games with any of the rest of the elves.
Exactly.
And, they tormented him, and it was, it's really sad.
His older brother Legolas was constantly ragging on him.
Oh, I mean, I thought this was an interesting episode. It was, although I was fairly confident that we would see Cindy again, it was nice to have their interactions, I thought, because they kind of have a fun, like, foil relationship where they're kind of friends, but also kind of enemies, and I enjoy that dynamic. And
She's one of the more fun characters on the show, only because, you know, like, our gang are kind of saccharinely sweet for me. You know, not that I need angst-filled teens or anything. That would also rub me the wrong way. But, you know, somebody with, like, a little bit of, a mean streak is more fun to watch at times, you know?
You don't think Rick has a little bit of a mean streak?
No, he's going into the angsty stuff for me.
She's just fine.
Sorry,
I was just gonna say that I'm impressed by their ability to get people back for little scenes.
Yes.
Like whatever, the wizard and
Joey.
Yeah.
That was it was interesting. I did not expect to see them in the Shadowlands. Mm-hmm. Like
I didn't either. And it worked really well. Like it was like
That scene is
appropriate for, like, you know, there's a thing where she lied. And
And that scene is very creepy, right? Like, in the diner. I thought that was effectively shot. And, like, Courtney's sort of discombobulation over, like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing here is effective as well.
Right. Yeah.
I thought the scene with Barbara was pretty good because I don't think anybody actually believes Barbara would think any of that. But, like, I can see why a kid would maybe think, like, worry about that. So I thought that scene was effective. I thought the scene with the stuff with Cindy and her mom was pretty effective too. Like, again, creepy and weird and unsettling. And the Dragon King is an interesting villain. Like, he's, again, not a character that I feel like I care very much about his motivations. Just seems to be kind of a crazy evil person.
Right.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice to have a little bit of both, I guess. I think it's cool, you know, like Guy was saying, Cindy's interesting because she has interesting motivations. The Shade is, like, even further toward the good side, but also has his own motivations, and it's nice to have a mix. And, you know, and, like, as long as you have a mix and not all the villains are just straight up villains who are, you know, bent on nothing but evil and destruction
or socialized healthcare and
that kind of thing,
stopping environmental pollution.
Horrors such as those. I think it works better. I mean, it makes it a more interesting story.
I also want to say that I really, you know, Guy mentioned not loving the black and white effect. I did love the effect with the movie screen at the end. Yeah. I thought that was really cool. Like, I like the way the shade turns it into the doorway, and then they sort of, like, there's that cool effect where they sort of press through and back into the real world. I thought that was cool. I really enjoyed, you know, I feel like almost everything with the shade this season I have really enjoyed, and so I'm kind of hoping that that little MacGuffin about him being in multiple places means that he's not totally dead, because I would be sad if he never came back again.
Yeah, I'd like that. I also liked it. He's just lying there. Well, he's sitting there in the cinema, kind of all exhausted. And he's like, well, I could kill you at any time. which is kind of, I mean, that's more or less true of not everybody, but like every time you're behind the wheel of a car, like you have the ability to take a life, but it's not like he's threatening. It's weird. I don't know how to think about that, because he's trying to come off as villainous, but he's just so bored. And he's like, his heart's not in it. It's like not really a threat. It's like, sure, you could, but you're not going to. Like, there's no, it is a statement of fact without any believable statement of intent. Do you know what I mean? It's right. Like, okay, yeah. I could do this dickish thing, but like, I'm not going to, because it's dickish, and why? And like, I really liked her little argument. Like, well, it didn't make a lot of sense. It was over the top. Like, kill me then, because I don't want to live without my daughter. I get the sentiment, but he wasn't. I didn't think his threat was real enough that it should have been responded to so forcefully. Well, but she's at the end of the rope, so she's
I think that's just playing the Trump card and being like, all right, fine, get on with it. I know you're not going to do this.
Yeah.
calling his bluff.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody there knew that it was like, well, this is, you're being silly. Yeah. Who cares? Like, everybody has his power at some point in some way over somebody else. Like, just like I said, driving a car. It's not, you have no intent to hurt anybody. So why even bring that up? Like, it's petty and small for you to bring that up. Like, I kind of laughed at it. Like, that's cute. And she took it more seriously. But whatever, it worked. Did we expect him to have to give his life? He was doing the moaning and groaning while doing magic thing. But I didn't know necessarily.
Yeah, but he talked about still not being totally healed, right? And it's something about, they mentioned like the diamond being destroyed, or like, he said something about like the healing kind of started, you know, but then it also, because of what Eclipso did with the diamond, it would like, it kind of slowed down, was my impression. So he says he's still in the darkness of the movie theater because he's still trying to like recoup a bit. So it's unclear. We don't really know. I think his relationship with Dr. Midnight, I thought was fabulous. Like, it's only a brief glimpse of it we get here, but the when they tell him that he's still alive in the Shadowlands, and he's genuinely shocked, and then feels like clearly very remorseful. He's like, if I had known, I would have looked for him or something, right? Like,
I did like the way that they thought each other were Charles. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. He considered them his friend, I kind of get.
I enjoy that. It's fun to have
like
that sort of
professional rival rather than like an enemy.
It's a little bit of a, you know, Magneto Professor X thing, right? Where it's like, you know, we were friends and like, or are friends, and you know, it's complicated, right? But like, there is some element of that running through it. So I enjoy that. I always enjoy when people on the opposite side of things have that sort of cordial, but like kind of friendly relationship. That's always a fun dynamic, I think.
Yeah. Like, you know, the Professor X one, Magneto, is perfect. Yeah. I mean, everybody knows that. Like, that's a common cultural thing now of like, well, they're both on the same side, but one of them is more militant sort of thing. So,
right. Yeah. But overall, I mean, I agree that in some ways it felt like this episode needed to do a little bit more with the Shadowlands. Like, they're fine, but it felt like, to me, it felt a little unambitious. Like, I wanted to see maybe a grander scope, but it's not enough that I'm like, I think it worked
well enough for me. Like, I think that initial scene and then the stuff with her, with Cindy's mom in particular, worked. I do find like a lot of this, you know, again, there's been a lot of it this season, though. The fact that they can't seem to separate the fact that it's complete fabrication, that it's just an illusion, and you just like, you, I mean, they get there, Like, you know, just like she tells her to ignore it and walk past, or he tells her that, Dr. Midnight tells her to just ignore
the Dragon King.
Who is it? Her mother? I can't.
It's the Dragon King.
The Dragon King's.
Yeah. The Dragon King. And walk past. And she does do that. But it's like, that seems like it took a long time to get there. Like, I think I would be able to do it a little bit faster, but maybe there's some sort of...
Look at this guy.
Well, I mean, like, and
sure, if I'm put in purgatory with a bunch of illusions of my worst fears, I'd just be on top of that.
I would fall down at so much of the rest of this, but I think if somebody were, like, standing there taunting me with, like, things that I had done that were mistakes in the past, I would be like, yeah. Yeah, it's a bummer. I really screwed up. Whatever. I mean, I'm not gonna stand here and sob about it because I got something I got to do. Okay. Yeah,
I feel like that is, I won't say purely a function of, like, you know, all of us in our getting older in life, but
that's possible.
I definitely spent more time harping on those kinds of things when I was in my 20s than when I was in my late 30s, early 40s, for sure. Right.
I mean, I you know, they still come back to me like in the middle of the night, but they don't cripple me from, you know, getting work done and stuff like that.
No, those are the calluses of age. That's you're just like, well, whatever. Just got to keep moving and accruing more of those regrets. Things. Yeah, yeah. No, I. Well, first, also, you've watched a lot more Star Trek episodes than they have, so also that's like a common.
So I'm used to. I guess maybe that's it. I'm used to phantasms.
Yeah. Phantasms. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you've got your grounding in that topic. Well done.
I need my pain.
you feed on it. I understand.
Oh, man. That's awesome. We got a Star Trek V reference in there. That's,
oh, my God.
That's worth the 100 points right there. Yeah.
I would
Oh, my God. Cybok, Uber Alice. I don't know why I went Uber Alice there. But
yeah, I'm not sure either.
Yeah. Anyway.
There's a lot going on there. Shall we do a ritual?
Yeah.
You
know what, Biff, pretty strong Biff. I enjoyed it, you know, despite a quibble with like a visual effect, whatever, that seems to just come up for me with this show. Like, I don't like the genie or the green lantern stuff. One thing I didn't say is that I do kind of like the way they're handling the Green Lantern, in that it seems to be much more magical based than sciencey fiction based, which is appropriate for the golden age heroes that they're
I liked the map a lot, actually. I thought that was cool looking.
Yeah, that worked. The pretty strong riff. I like the way the character... I mean, this was an episode where stuff happened, so that was cool. Like I said, I hope the shade comes back. And I like the idea of teaming up with your nemesis in the form of... what's her name? The stabby lady.
Cindy.
The dragon lady. Cindy, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, all around, pretty strong app.
John?
Yeah, I give it a pretty strong Biff too. I quibble with their ability to move past the fact that these are illusions, but the Shade's sacrifice of, you know, whether he's dead or not, is a moment that I think we clearly have been building toward throughout most of the season, and it paid off pretty well. It's good. And because it worked because Dr. Midnight shows up too, I think. That part helps it pay off. And then the stuff with Cindy was probably my favorite part because, you know, she's complicated. She's extremely complicated. She's not a good person, but she's also been, you know, tortured throughout her life. So you have to cut her a little slack, I guess.
Yeah.
Even though she's stabby. But it's a... Yeah, it was a good episode.
Yeah, I agree. I it's a bit for me, and I like the... Especially for me, I'm a sucker for reunions at the end, so like Pat and Dr. Midnight getting a hug at the end, I thought was also kind of a great moment. You know, it's our, you know, some of the JSA is still alive, which is kind of great. And I liked a lot of this episode. I like the stuff with Cindy. I like Court and Cindy's relationship. I love the stuff with the Shade. I think, again, he's been one of my breakout characters for this season. Just complex and interesting, and lots going on there. Cool powers, all of that. Like, all of that works together for him. And the actor is really good, too. Overall, like, I mean, you know, this is... We're getting to the point where we need to sort of, like, hit the upswing, right? Because we've been down in the dumps with, like, all of our... You know, Yolanda leaving and Rick getting thrown in jail. Oh no, we all forgot Rick's in jail. we've been leaving there for like 2 days. And, you know, Courtney getting sucked in the Shadowlands and all this. So it feels like maybe this is the turning point, right? Where they're going to be able to bring stuff back around and take on Eclipso at the end and perhaps not just get the floor wiped with them. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays off.
It'll be in the ultimate episode.
Oh, yeah, probably. I would assume so. If it's in the penultimate episode, that would be strange. What do we do with the last episode? No, just hang out.
Dream sequence.
Dream sequence. Oh, yes. The classic Buffy move.
Yep.
Yeah, so I like this episode a lot. I'm continue to enjoy the season. It's had its ups and downs for sure, but I feel like overall I love the atmosphere that they've created this season after last season. It feels very distinct from last season, which is nice. And so, you know, assuming it does get renewed for next season, I don't remember if it has been yet or not. I assume they would find yet another. Oh, it has, right? Because we know they're going to be a Sportsmaster. Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a regular next season.
Right.
And Joel McHale. So,
Angel McHale.
So, like, all of those additions for next season make me feel like, okay, we're going with a different, another different direction, right? Like, so that's cool. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. And those, the addition of those two makes me feel like we'll get a bit more fun and goofiness and like a little bit of a campy feeling. Like, I don't think we need Batman 66 back, but something that was like a little more lighthearted and like a little more campy. It could really be a clown.
Yeah, I really enjoy it, like, if the seasons had different, you know, fairly different tones like that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one reason they did the summer school branding this year, right, is, like, set it apart as, like a run, right, like in your comics. Yeah. So I think it's cool that you can kind of do that.
Summer school like in winter.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Like, call next season Golden Age. Just go for it, you know? Have a bunch of goofy, fun, you know, fun stuff going on. I would enjoy that.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week to talk about episode 12 of Stargirl season 2. Before we go, do we want to talk about any other superhero shenanigan stuff going on?
Speaking of Batman 66, I have watched the trailer.
I've watched so many recuts of that trailer too. Like, there's one with the Batman animated series. There's a Ted Lasso one.
And then there's the Flash trailer, which there's has also a lot of Flash Batman
trailer
in it.
Yeah, a lot of Batman in that trailer. DC continues on its slightly perplexing. I don't know. We'll take 5 minutes and talk about the Batman trailer. I don't know. What do you guys think about, like, does the look or feel of that movie appeal to you?
I don't think we need Batman 66 back, but I would love to see him show up and beat the crap out of that Batman. With, like, he would have a Batman, he would have a bat repellent is what he would have. Just a bat, like, Batman repellent. Yeah. I don't know. It just feels like generic angsty Batman being vengeancy on people. Yeah. It's like, okay.
Well. It seems a little bit too much in that vein for me, but I'll probably wait for the reviews to see.
Yeah, same.
Some of the shots are pretty. I still like his car. You know, I don't like when he's just getting machine gunned.
That's
pointless.
Yeah, that would
be bulletproof,
right? I mean, even if you're bulletproof, that would knock you the hell over. Like,
because he's Batman.
Oh, right. Sorry, forgot. My bad. Retracted.
Like, wouldn't that be more interesting if he could get shot, but he was hurt like a son of a gun, and he broke some ribs, and he would have to limp away? That would be a lot more cool than just walking down a hallway and getting machine gunned. Because, it sort of bugged me about Black Panther too at one point, because I think in the opening scene of that movie, he jumps down and he takes a whole bunch of these hijackers, and he sneaks them. And I think we've talked about this before.
Yeah, we did.
It's for like a terror thing. But you know, at one point they just machine gun him in the face, and it doesn't do anything. It's like, well, there's not a lot of why do I care? Like, why do I care that he's sneaky and good when he could just get machine gunned and like have nothing happen to him?
Yeah,
It's kind of boring.
Yeah, I, you know, what I had been hopeful about this movie when they first started talking about it was really like that sort of like detective-y angle. And it feels like there's not enough of that here for me. Like,
I really hope.
Yeah, I bet you're going to be disappointed.
I was really excited for that. Like, oh, there's like the Riddler's like a serial killer or something, and we got to track him down. And boy, that scene in the trailer where they're like sitting across the glass in the prison from each other.
Yeah, and he screams at him,
"What have you done?" I was like, first of all, I don't like that voice. Second of all, yelling never gets you anywhere, Batman. Okay.
There's a car chase with a penguin.
With the penguin. Yeah.
That's the thing. Oh, yeah.
That's Colin Farrell continues to blow me away.
The third movie, his plan is basically to grab Bane and yell at him.
Yeah.
Where's the detonator? That'll get
anyway,
you there.
In an odd twist, I suppose, from my expectations from trailers, I really hope that they've shown us all of the action scenes in the movie.
Yeah, right. And
the rest is just some serious lab work or something. I don't know. Like, I hope this is balanced a lot more carefully than it appears to be from this trailer.
I don't love what I have seen, but okay. I mean, I'm sure he looks fine.
I kind of like him in the suit.
The suit's not bad. Yeah. Some of the design stuff's not bad.
The suit looks really good, actually.
I didn't particularly like this trailer because I felt that it didn't. And maybe this is more of a teaser than a real trailer, but like I didn't really get a sense of the story. It felt very muddy and convoluted to me in terms of like, so what's this movie about, right? Like, sell me, like, I know Batman. You can't sell me a movie just on the fact that it's Batman anymore, because I've seen, like, a dozen of them. Like,
I've buried so many Batman movies.
I wanted a little bit better sense of, like, what is this? So what's your take? Why should I care about this version of Batman? And I felt like I just wanted a little bit more of, what's the story? Like, what's going on?
Right.
It may be more of a teaser than a.
You may be asking the wrong movie company for that.
I'm trying to remain hopeful. I mean, someday they'll figure out what the hell they're doing.
Imagine they just gave Batman to the MCU just for one movie. Just see what you can do with him. Just show us how it's done, and we'll take that money.
I mean, it worked for
Disney to buy DC. You know,
for Sony and Spider-Man. It's just like, okay, here, we'll give you our toys. You show us how to play with our toys, and then we'll go and, you know, try it ourselves. But man, anyway, hopefully it's good. Who knows?
There was also, I did watch the one brief, it's mostly just him giving a spiel, but there was a brief scene from the first of Black Adam, which is the Rock's doing the classic sort of anti-hero. I have no idea what to expect from that movie. I'm not big into anti-heroes, and I thought the parts I liked about Shazam were the parts about, you know, him being a kid in a superhero's body, right? Like, there was some fundamentally funny stuff in Shazam, and some touching stuff, frankly, too. I thought some of it was very effective. It had a similar scene where people are like shooting him a bunch and nothing's happening as the Batman trailer. I was like, all right, guys, like this scene is getting old. The scene where people just machine gun you and nothing happens.
It's not surprising anymore.
Yeah, it's not surprising or cool anymore. Let it go. Yeah.
Right.
So.
No, Superman Returns did a better version of that anyway when they shot him in the eyeball.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he's Superman. Not everybody should get to be Superman, right?
And he's charming about it and cracks a joke. What does he say? Something about it.
He doesn't. I don't think he says anything. He just smiles. He just has this tiny little smile.
I'm thinking about Christopher Reeve when he stops him and he's like, oh.
Bad vibrations.
Bad vibrations, yeah. Oh, somebody hits him with a crowbar.
Which is the most 70s thing he could have possibly said.
Yeah, it's so funny.
Superman lived through the 70s. Anyway, so yeah, I don't know. DC seems to be doing a full court press. We'll see where that goes. They've had very mixed success so far. I also want to note that there was, they did push back a bunch of the next year's Marvel movies due to everything going on. So I think the Doctor Strange movie is now in the summer. Is that right? It was supposed to be March, I think. And I think it got pushed back.
I think that got moved to May.
May. Okay. So everything got moved back like a couple months.
Yeah. And then some of them are getting pushed out a little bit more than 2 months.
I really enjoyed, there's a tweet from the Ant-Man screenwriter about like, I don't understand why they pushed this back. And it's like a screenshot of him like it's a picture of him holding like a glass of liquor and like a screenshot on the screen of the screenplay, except it's just like, it's just a fake made up screenplay about Scott being a god to ants. It's amusing. I thought that was funny. There's plenty of, weirdly enough, there are plenty of Marvel movies in the pipeline with Eternals coming out in like 2 weeks. Spider-Man coming out in 2 months,
December.
So yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah. And we get Hawkeye at the end of next
That's
month.
Right. Coming close, about a month away.
And there was also the Flash teaser.
I did see that.
Which is much more fun than the Batman one, yeah. I think. It does have maybe a little too much Batman in it for a Flash trailer. Mm-hmm. But I even still, the music in it is terrific. I mean, they hit
I gotta rewatch that one. Yeah.
Terrific note when they're panning through like Wayne Manor. That is right out of the original movie. The 88 movie.
89.
And also, if you've played Lego Batman, which I have a million times with my son, you will remember it from that. But it seemed I was much more interested in that movie after seeing that teaser, because it just seemed like it might be fun. So
I thought for a second you were talking about there is also a teaser out there for next season of The Flash, but I'm guessing I'm the only one who watched
it. No, it was not that.
I will say, of that teaser, the only thing that I really enjoyed is Ray Palmer shows up, and I love me some Ray Palmer. He's Brandon Routh is always good. And
I'll watch the crossover, but yeah. I have not kept up on The Flash at all because it's gotten really bad.
Yeah, all of that is correct.
So. Yeah.
These are my opinions. You're welcome to them.
Thank you. All right. Well, that's all we got time for. We remind you, as always, you can reach out to us at BiffCast or biff@theincomparable.com or in the member Slack, represent Biff, shoot us your questions, your comments, your thoughts. If there's stuff you want us to talk about or stuff you'd like to see us cover, let us know. We're always game to check out some other stuff. And as always, I'd like to thank my compatriots, Guy English. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, guys. That was fun. I trying to come up with a funny joke, and I think I'm all tapped out. Okay. I was definitely looking for a train joke that we had not used, and
I think we went through all of them.
Yeah, I think that's it. There's no more train jokes.
Wow. Yeah, I'm just kind of All right, John Maltz, always a pleasure.
I look forward to next week when we link up again.
Wow. Wow, that went off without a hitch, you might say.
Oh,
there you go.
Bleep bloop.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. As always, go check out John's shirts at cottonbureau.com. Search for BiffCast. So many shirts. Yep. So much. And we'll see you next week.